He has been part of the American landscape for more than 50 years, and he's not done yet. Welcome to the full story on WSHU and online at WSHU.org. I'm Ron Ropiak. We invite you to join us on Twitter. Type in full story WSHU, and there we are. You can ask a question or comment on today's show by emailing us, tfs@wshu.org, or leave us a voicemail, 833-CALL-TFS. That's 833-225-5837. And you should know, our programs are now available as podcasts on Apple or Google Play. He was born in Winsted, Connecticut in 1934. And is still a resident of the Nutmeg State. He has written on his manual typewriter a number of books. Now, I'm sure some kids are scratching their heads right now and thinking, what the heck is a manual typewriter? But his latest one is To the Ramparts, How Bush and Obama Paved the Way for the Trump Presidency, and Why It Isn't Too Late to Reverse Course. Ralph Nader, welcome to The Full Story. How are you, sir?
Very good. Thank you, Ron.
Looking back on your life, how would you compare what's taking place politically this year in 2019 with other times?
Well, there's no doubt our democracy is a lot weaker. There's more power in the hands of the few who decide for the many, from Wall Street to the bureaucrats in Washington who are indebted and indentured to Wall Street money and prospect of future jobs. I'm talking about Congress and members of the executive branch. And when we started in the 1960s on auto safety, we got Senator Abraham Ribicoff from Connecticut to have a hearing in the Senate. And then Senator Magnuson got the bill through the Senate, the auto safety, highway safety bills. And then we got it through the House, and Lyndon Johnson, the president, signed it. And I was at the signing ceremony. And with erratic enforcement, that law has saved or averted, according to the Center for Auto Safety, 3.5 million fatalities in our country, not to mention telling other countries they better step up on auto safety features or they can't get into the U.S. market. Now, you couldn't do that today. You couldn't get hearings. The press is otherwise occupied with features for prizes. They don't cover the running story like the Daily Beat reporters did in the 1960s. My going up, testimony, what's going on, auto recalls, reactions by General Motors. You couldn't get it enacted. Certainly Trump wouldn't sign it. So we ought to be very worried about why so many of us have withdrawn and become cynical about politics and not engaged our sovereign power under the Constitution to instruct Congress and the White House what they should be doing of, by, and for the American people. You know, the preamble of the Constitution, Ron, starts with we the people. It doesn't start we the Congress or we the corporation. We should always remember that's a tremendous asset for ourselves. We are the sovereign power, and we've delegated it without standards and without accountabilities to these politicians who then have sold it to the rich and powerful in the corporate world.
Before we get to talk a little bit more about politics and President Trump, I just want to reference something that you just said. You were talking about the media and how the press has changed since the 1960s. What is it that you don't like about what the media does nowadays?
Well, they don't have a sense of what's most important. Just take NPR and PBS, which you're familiar with. They cover a lot of immigration issues, and they cover some of the mistreatment and the separation of families. But to my knowledge, they've never covered what the Johns Hopkins School of Medicine physicians documented in a peer-reviewed study over 2.5 years ago, that 5,000 Americans die every week due to preventable problems in hospitals, hospital-induced infection, malpractice, incompetence, accidents, bad combination of drugs. Now, that's 250,000 Americans whose lives could be saved. And that is a staggering figure, Ron. And not only do politicians don't want to take it up because of the powerful drug and hospital lobbies, but why isn't NPR talking about it? Why isn't EPBS reporting it. That wasn't the first study. There have been Harvard Medical School studies and others that have documented this horrendous toll. You can imagine, it's considered the third leading cause of preventable death in America, in hospitals. And the same is true for the billing fraud in this country, which is staggering. The expert at Harvard, Malcolm Sparrow, applied mathematician, told me last year that his minimal estimate for computerized billing fraud in the healthcare industry alone is $350 billion. Billion. That's half of the military budget. And that isn't considered a newsworthy thing to track and follow. So all these citizen groups that try to do something, they get no airtime. They get no radio time. They get no print time. Therefore, why should lawmakers pay attention to their accurate charges and reforms? They don't. So the media, you know, it's not a matter of Trump and fake news. The media has deteriorated perceptibly since the 1960s, 1970s. If you turn on the network evening television news now, you can't believe how superficial it is, how sensational it is, how much is devoted to what really wasn't considered news 50 years ago or 40 years ago by Walter Cronkite of CBS News, the famous anchor.
Mr. Nader, you ask a question. I have no good answer for you, but I will tell you this, that it prompted a lot of response here, and I'm sure that we'll be doing a show on it probably in the near future. Now, can
I'd love to elaborate because, I helped NPR and PBS. I lobbied in Congress for a budget for NPR and PBS decades ago, and I have been on NPR and PBS less than I'm on the commercial TV and radio stations. I'm on more on Fox News than I am on MSNBC because they don't like progressives. They like liberals, you know, corporate liberals like Hillary Clinton, the warmonger, the butcher of Libya, the senator who never saw a weapon system she didn't like. That's the kind of people they like on MSNBC. They don't like people like Noam Chomsky, the late Howard Zinn. They don't like people who are progressives and who want a peaceful foreign policy, who are against militarism and a bloated military budget, and who want to bring corporations to accountability for their mistreatment of workers and consumers and communities and small taxpayers with all their the big tax loopholes of the big guys getting away with it.
Ralph Nader, what do you think of President Trump?
I think he doesn't deserve to be in office. Just look, if you had a neighbor that had power over you and you could remove him under the Constitution, and that neighbor was lying to you constantly, that promising things and breaking the promise, we're going to have clean air, clean water, the best affordable health care system, he said during the campaign. If you had a neighbor that didn't study your neighborhood, knew nothing about your neighborhood, only cared about enriching himself off your neighborhood, if you had a neighbor that shut down the services that served you, like the government shut down, for some cockamamie scheme of a wall on the border that even the border agents think is very low on the priority in terms of dealing with immigration illegally, which is down by 80% from 2000, by the way, the southern border. What would you do? Wouldn't you fire that neighbor if you had the authority? Well, that's Donald Trump. So let's bring it down here. And let's talk to the Trump voters and say, look, what's your excuse now? You voted for him because you hated Hillary Clinton. You voted for him because he gave you a whole bunch of phony promises about making America great again. He's making America dread again. He wants to get rid of enough health insurance coverage to take 20 million Americans off of health insurance. How about that for anxiety, dread, and fear, American families all over the country? You make no bones about it. When you say, with all its infirmities, he wanted to overthrow Obamacare, he had nothing to replace it. Nothing to replace it. Never mind, you know, that people in this country die and get sick and injured continually because they have not been able to afford health insurance to get diagnosed and treated in time. That's a Harvard Medical School study that now, after Obamacare, estimates still 35,000 Americans die because they can't afford health insurance and get treated in time. There's no country in the Western world where anybody dies because they can't afford health insurance. Canada, Luxembourg, Germany, even Japan, Taiwan. So he's disgracing America. He's pulling down America. He's the man who said that Americans are being paid too much as workers. He said that in the campaign. Paid too much? They worked much harder than you do, Donald, with your golfing outlets and 200 days golfing since you were selected president by the Electoral College. You lost the popular vote to Clinton. And so $7.25 an hour, federal minimum wage, that's too much. He has never proposed an increase in the minimum wage. 30 million Americans making less today, adjusted for inflation, than they made, workers made in 1968.
Mr. Nader, I have to ask you to hold 1 minute. We have to take a short break. He's Ralph Nader. He's 84 years old. He's full of fire, as you can hear, and he's with us for about another 15 to 20 minutes. This is The Full Story on WSHU. I'm Ron Ropiak. We are talking today with Ralph Nader, former presidential candidate. He has a number of books out, a new one, To the Ramparts, How Bush and Obama Paved the Way for the Trump Presidency and Why It Isn't Too Late to Reverse Course. Mr. Nader, you don't pull any punches in your book. You write, the voters' sense of abandonment rests solidly on the shoulders of the Democrats who let them down big time. Which Democrats? Are you talking about Bill and Hillary? Are you talking about Barack Obama, Joe Biden?
Yeah, pretty much all of them. They raise more money from Wall Street than the Republicans. What does that tell you? They never stood up for labor unions. They never stood up for universal health insurance, which was proposed 100 years ago by Republican President Teddy Roosevelt, or Kennedy for president then in 2012, and which was proposed by President Harry Truman in the 1940s. They sat on a $7 and a quarter minimum wage when they controlled the Congress in 2009, 2010, Obama. They controlled the Congress. He promised $9.50 by 2011, never mentioned it for the first 4 years of his presidency. They talked a good game on environment, but they never required the auto companies to increase their fuel efficiency and do the research and development that would reduce pollution and greenhouse gases and give consumers a break in terms of how much they get, how many miles they get.
Just out of curiosity, would you include Bernie Sanders in this?
No. Bernie Sanders is just the opposite. You wanted a living wage. You wanted universal health care. He wanted to clean up election rackets. He proved he could raise $230 million with an average contribution of only $27 or $28 per donor, a spectacular performance, and didn't accept corporate money, corporate PACs. He would have won the nomination, except there was dirty tricks by the Democratic National Committee, which is documented after the election,
especially
in the Nevada and Iowa primaries.
With what you're saying, if Bernie Sanders runs again, will you support him?
I don't support blanket any candidate. I pick and choose their issues. I think Bernie is weak on military and foreign policy. He's never really challenged the bloated military budget, which takes over half of the government's entire operational budget. And there's no more major enemy. You know, Soviet Union's gone, etc. So that's where he's weak. So, if you endorse a candidate, Ron, you basically are stuck with blanket support, and I don't do that. I praise them when they need to be and criticize them when they deserve it.
You mentioned Barack Obama a few minutes ago. At least I brought him up, and he is revered by many Democrats. And yet in your book, your new book, you write, in his 8 years as president, Obama jetted around nearly 500 times to fat cat political fundraisers where he could glad hand the wealthy, but paid nary a visit to the grassroots to spend learning and galvanizing time with ordinary people or their national civic groups nearby in Washington, D.C. Some Obama supporters aren't going to be too crazy about hearing that, are they?
That's an interesting yardstick that's never been talked about. In 8 years, he spent 500 days outside of Washington raising money from fat cats who want something in return. And where was he when the workers were challenging Governor Walker in Wisconsin, who was trying to crush him, this right-wing Republican governor? And they begged him to come up. They had huge rallies around the state capitol in Madison, and he wouldn't come up. So then they invited Joe Biden to come up, the vice president, and he wanted to go up. And the White House told them not to go. That's one of the reasons why they lost Wisconsin in 2016. That's why they lost Pennsylvania, you know, Democratic states, Michigan, Democratic states. Barack Obama didn't prosecute any of the Wall Street crooks. Over 90% of the people in this country, liberal, conservative, whatever, wanted Wall Street crooks to be prosecuted for collapsing the economy from their own greed in 2008-2009, that only unemployed 8 million workers, crashed trillions of dollars of pension fund and mutual fund valleys, and then turned around and demanded that you, the taxpayer, bail out these Wall Street crooks, and he let them off. And, of course, he was as aggressive, if not more, with illegal drone attacks and warfare abroad, violating international law, going into countries warlike without congressional declaration of war, violating the Constitution. This former lecturer in constitutional law at the University of Chicago Law School. Yeah, but you see, by comparison with Trump, anybody looks good. And that's what Trump does for us. He makes so war criminals like George W. Bush and Dick Cheney, they're technically and clinically war criminals. They attacked Iraq, they invaded Iraq, blew the country apart without a declaration of war by Congress. And that was the most important power given to Congress by our founding fathers, Thomas Jefferson, James Madison. They didn't want a president to lead a country into war. They didn't want another King George. But, you know, they all look good compared to Donald Trump. Donald Trump is making these terrible leaders of our country, our beloved country, look good. And we shouldn't allow that to happen. We should up the standards, not just for Donald Trump, but for all our presidents, Democrat or Republican. We give them too much power to begin with, without holding them up to high standards of responsiveness to the people, not the corporations.
You're listening to The Full Story on WSHU. We are talking with Connecticut resident and one-time presidential candidate Ralph Nader, and he has a new book out. It's called To the Ramparts, How Bush and Obama Paved the Way for the Trump Presidency and Why It Isn't Too Late to Reverse Course. Mr. Nader, can we talk about where we are and how we got here? There are those who still say that by you running for president and getting more than 97,000 votes, that you won Florida for George Bush over Al Gore. Some other people say that's ridiculous, that the votes came from elsewhere, and Al Gore lost it for Al Gore. Do you ever stop and think about that?
Yeah, I've asked Al Gore about that. He knows why he lost. He won the popular vote. In most countries, that gets you the office, doesn't it? He won the popular vote by over 500,000 votes in the country. But because of the Electoral College, which we should neutralize or repeal, the election was thrown into Florida, where there was a lot of crookery going on with Governor Jeb Bush and his Secretary of State in Tallahassee, stealing votes, deceiving people with ballot design, taking away the rights of people to vote because their names happen to be resembling ex-felons, which can't vote, couldn't vote then in Florida. And then the Supreme Court politicians, 5-4, selected Bush. So they're blaming the Green Party for this? They're giving the Green Party delusions of grandeur here. The Green Party has as much to run its candidates for president as any other party. So why the double standard? Why do they treat Green Party candidates and Conservative Party candidates and Libertarian Party candidates as second-class citizens? That's political bigotry, Rob. Political bigotry, and it deprives people of their essential free a freedom of speech under the First Amendment to speak, to petition, to assemble. And if you deprive people of voices and choices beyond the two parties on the ballot when you urge them to vote, you are weakening the meaning of their vote because you're keeping people off who have new ideas, new agendas. And our agendas, by the way, had majoritarian support, one after another: living wage, full universal health insurance, cracking down on corporate crime against consumers, workers, tax reform, etc. Go to votenator.org. I left it open in 2008. I left the website open so you can see how much of our agenda had majoritarian support, left-right support against crony capitalism, corporate welfare, cracking down on Wall Street, breaking up the big banks in New York who are too big to fail and we have to bail them out. All these are supported by many conservatives and liberal voters.
Mr. Nader, I have to ask you, listening to you, how do you keep the fire? How do you keep the energy going after all these years?
Because I think justice is the great work of human beings on earth, without which there's no liberty and freedom, no opportunity, no fulfillment of human possibilities. And that's the most important work, justice in all its meanings at all levels of humanity.
You're listening to The Full Story on WSHU and online at WSHU.org. I'm Ron Ropiak. And Mr. Nader, can we talk a little bit about consumer protection? The actions that you and the so-called Nader's Raiders back in the 60s, what you did led to some landmark legislation. I'm thinking about the Clean Water Act, the Freedom of Information Act, Consumer Product Safety Act. Those are just a few of the many. We seem to take them for granted nowadays. What should be done next for consumer safety?
I think the big thing is to decrease the preventable mortality and morbidity in our healthcare facilities. As I mentioned, 250,000 people lose their lives from preventable problems in hospitals, according to Johns Hopkins School of Medicine, a peer-reviewed report, among others. That's number one. The second is people have lost control of their money around. Once they go into the credit card, debit card economy, it's over. What do I mean by that? Well, let's say by mistake you bounced a check. And let's say in the old days, they wanted to charge you $35, which it costs the banks about a dollar, by the way. It's a profit center. In the old days, they would have to ask you to send them a check. Now they just debit your account. So you can have all kinds of charges, late fees. We're talking tens of billions of dollars now by insurance companies, banks, credit card companies invading your privacy, threatening, auto dealers, if you give them a hard time on a lemon car, and they'll say, well, you're complaining a lot. You're going to damage your credit rating. You're going to lower your credit score. I mean, the censorship. And then the fine print contracts were like contract serfs. They're one-sided contracts that put the responsibility on us, not on the big corporations. And not only that, but they take away our rights in cases of wrongful injury to sue. Our constitutional right to have a trial by jury if a product defect like an unsafe car, a design, a defective car, hazardous drugs, toxic chemicals, malpractice, these contracts that we sign, the fine print contracts that we sign, they're all the same. They don't compete over them. They take away. Say we got to go to compulsory arbitration, got to waive trial by jury, we got to waive liability to these wrongdoers. So that's a whole area we've got to work on. Go to faircontracts.org, and you'll see how you have been stripped of your precious freedom of contract, one of the great pillars of freedom, especially according to conservatives and libertarians in our country, has been almost entirely taken away. 99% of all contracts we'll ever sign our fine print standard form contracts.
Mr. Nader, you have had such a distinguished career and life. Do you ever sit back in your lazy boy and say, I'm really proud of, and you just kind of smile and think about something that you're proud of?
No, there's too much to do, and I don't like to look back. people say, look at all you've done. Yeah, but we could have done so much more if we had a decent Congress, even at the level of the 1960s Congress. We have got to go back and deal with Congress. That's why I just printed a book called How the Rats Reformed the Congress. It's a fable, but it's to make people laugh themselves seriously enough to organize in every congressional district, your two senators and representatives, a citizens' watchdog group made up of liberals and conservatives to turn this country around where they all agree on so many things. If they stop and wonder why these politicians keep dividing and ruling conservatives and liberals against each other, well, there are a lot of areas where they're together, but they're not getting any press, like living wage, like universal health care, like cracking down on corporate crooks, like a fair tax system.
Donald Trump is going to be in office for another 2 years. Have you given any thought as to whether or not you would consider running again?
No, I haven't given any thought because third parties don't have a chance for equal opportunity on the ballot. They're rejected from being on the debates, even though polls said people wanted me on the debates, a majority of poll, even a Fox poll.
But do you think that's accurate nowadays? Because in Connecticut, unaffiliateds, there are more unaffiliateds now than Democrats or Republicans.
Yeah, well, you know, and they're all unaffiliated. When they go to the polls, there's only really two choices, Republican and Democrat. And they know it, and they want to be with the winner. You want a prediction for Trump's speech tonight?
Yes, I do.
He's going to be on all the networks. Now, why would Trump want to be all networks on this border wall squabble and the huge government shutdown? 800,000 workers, many of them critical facilities. People are now going to have their safety and health jeopardized, their critical services. Why would he want to go on? Because he's a bully, and here's what I think he's going to do. I may be wrong, but we better be ready for it. He's going to say, I, Donald Trump, am going to declare a national emergency, or I'm going to threaten a national emergency if I don't get my way in Congress, and we'll just let the courts work it out. And in the meantime, he becomes a tyrant. Let the courts work it out. You know how long the courts take. And he's going to create a national emergency and say he's got the authority to do so because there is a fervid crisis on the border, which is a fake report. It's been exposed again and again. And he's going to say, let the courts work it out. In the meantime, I'm the leader. If he does that, we got a constitutional crisis. So what are we going to do about it as people? This is tyranny reminiscent of why our founding fathers had a balanced system of government, three branches of government, to check the possible emergence of tyranny in the White House.
He says that he doesn't like to look back, that he's just going to keep going, that there's too much to do now. Mr. Nader, we have 30 seconds left. Final thoughts, please.
Well, I'd like to have gotten some of your questions. If the switchboard lit up, we should have gotten some of your questions, but go to ratsreformcongress.org, listeners, and you'll see a whole instruction material on how to build your own citizen power groups on your two senators and representatives and summon them to your town meetings, with your agendas. You can also get the book, Rats, How the Rats Reformed the Congress. People are ordering this book 5 copies at a time, Ron. I think we may be seeing the beginning of a living room discussion revolt in this country. 5 copies at a time now. We've never had that before.
Mr. Nader, we don't...
Ratsreformcongress.org.
Mr. Nader, we don't mind you going on Fox, but you are always welcome on NPR and WSHU. You know that, don't you, right?
Thank you.
Ralph Nader, the book is To the Ramparts, How Bush and Obama Paved the Way for the Trump Presidency and Why It Isn't Too Late to Reverse Course. Thank you, sir. We appreciate your time, and hopefully we'll talk again soon in the next few months.
Thank you, Nutmeggers.
This is the full story on WSHU and online at WSHU.org. And I just have to say, if when I'm 84 and I have half the energy and enthusiasm of Ralph Nader, I'll be a happy guy. Follow us. We ask you to follow us on Twitter, Full Story WSHU, and add your tweets and suggestions and comments. Now, as I mentioned, we spent a half hour with former presidential candidate and a person some people call the father of the consumer protection movement, Ralph Nader. Now, let's bring in someone who deals with consumer issues on a daily basis. Michelle Siegel is the commissioner of the Connecticut Department of Consumer Protection. She was the deputy commissioner starting in 2011 and became the commissioner in 2017. Commissioner Siegel, thank you for being with us today. Hi, Commissioner.
Hi.
How are you?
I'm doing well, thank you. I was just listening to your interview with Ralph Nader. He has a lot of good ideas, interesting discussion.
A lot of good ideas, and like I said, a lot of energy, and he just keeps going. thinking about that interview, I'm amazed at how far we've come in the last few decades. I think about what he was doing and reading about what he was doing back in the early 60s, and I'm amazed at what we've accomplished, but I know we have so much further to go for consumer protection. Do you feel the same?
It's really one of these things we'll never get to an end point. There's always going to be opportunities to protect consumers, and especially technology is evolving. So maybe as we fix some issues, all of a sudden we have this whole world online and these whole new opportunities for people out there who aren't doing the right thing, for scammers, wrongdoers, to take advantage of consumers. So it's always important to be out there to have consumer protection watchdogs that can keep up with changing technologies and changing marketplaces.
Now, nowadays, when I think of consumer protection, I'm thinking of internet scams, someone phishing for information or creating websites to get your vitals. Or I think of someone trying to do that, specifically targeting the elderly. What are the top issues for the DCP?
Internet scams is definitely a big one. So that's something everybody should definitely be conscious of when you're buying something on the internet. You really want to be sure you understand who's on the other side of that transaction. So that's a big one. We continue do not call complaints. It always remains a concern for consumers and a big issue. And with technology, again, it's hard to stay on top of because now it's even easier for people to spoof or disguise their phone number or to make calls in a way that's really not very difficult or expensive. So those are big. But we continue to have traditional ones, people who have problems maybe with a contractor they've hired or with a door-to-door salesman. So there's certainly the traditional problems remain, but there's definitely with online businesses a whole new arena.
When you say do not call, do you mean robocalls?
Yeah, so robocalls is certainly a big one where you know, and it's so much easier now with computer technology to do that or to disguise your phone number, or you get the scams, the person pretending to be from the IRS and calling, claiming that you owe back taxes or are going to be arrested. So that's certainly a problem.
They're so well disguised. They're so well done. And I've known people, well, smart people, educated, who have been taken in by these scams. And how do you prevent that?
It's incredibly hard. And one of the best ways to prevent that, and again, that's why I'm really happy to be on your show, is really consumers need to be alert and need to be paying attention and aware that these things are out there. So for us, whenever we get the chance, we want people to know what are the big signs of a scam. And, you know, a big one is somebody you don't know has contacted you. Now, of course, they're not going to acknowledge they're a stranger. They're going to claim they're from the IRS or your utility company or your bank. But you don't actually know who they are other than by taking their word for it. Again, they'll claim it's a legitimate reason, but you're still just taking their word for it. But big signs that it's a scam and really where consumers need to be alert is they're going to start pressuring you for money or information. They'll create a sense of urgency. Either something really bad is going to happen, your utility is going to be shut off, you're going to be arrested, or they're going to pressure you to give them money and information because you're going to miss out on something great. You know, you've just won this foreign lottery, but you better give them $200 to handle taxes or something else. So they're going to do that. They're going to ask you for your money or if it's information in a way where you can't pull it back and it can't be tracked. You know, asking you to read off the numbers for a prepaid card is certainly a popular trick that scammers will use. And you'll usually be encouraged to make a decision quickly, not tell others, not consult with anyone. So when you find yourself in this situation, no matter what, whether it's through the phone or it's an email that comes in or somebody knocking on your door, if you're being pressured to give money or give information and to do it quickly and to not consult with anyone, that's a real warning sign that somebody's trying to steal your money or your personal information.
Or it's the scary ones, too. I'm writing for your grandchild, David, who is in trouble right now and he can't write himself. He needs $10,000 because he's been in an accident. Can you wire this money right away? Something along those lines, right?
Yeah, those are, and of course, and that's what they do. They get you in this sort of state of fear where you're thinking emotionally, you're not thinking logically, and yeah, it's kind of called the grandparent scam, and it's terrifying. And you know, probably in one part of your brain, this is not real, but there's that little piece of you that's going to think, oh my God, what if it is? You know, we always encourage find a way to verify that you're talking to who you think you're talking to. Ask a question that only that person would know if you're really not certain. Find a way to sort of get off the phone and offer to call back, and then call your grandson, call your cousin, whoever they're claiming to be, and see if have they really just gone off to wherever and been arrested. So definitely you always want to verify who's on the other end and be familiar with, you know, when somebody's trying to terrify you into giving them money, that it's probably a scam.
You have a great website, and I learned so much being on it the other day. But at the same time, it was a bit worrisome because I saw some of the new scams that are out there. The ones that you point out are now with Google Maps and with Netflix. Can you take a few minutes and describe them for those who are listening?
Right. So, those are two significant ones that we're starting to see more of. So the Google Maps scam, something to be aware of is it's not terribly difficult for somebody to kind of get into Google Maps and change the information for a business. And so that when you look up a phone number and you're pulling it off of the Google Maps, you may actually be getting a phone number for somebody else and not the legitimate business. So it really just takes you right back, know who you're dealing with. If you want to call up your bank, go to your bank's website if you need, or find an old bill and get the phone number for there so that when you make the phone call, you know you've called the right place. So that's enormously important, and that's just one thing to be aware of, because I think people generally think, I did a Google search, it's going to be fine, and may not realize, depending on where the search takes you, there's an opportunity for that to have been manipulated. You know, we're hearing about this Netflix phishing scam, and really you get this from a lot of businesses. It's where somebody emails you claiming that there's some trouble with your account or there's a billing problem, and now you need to send them money right away, or you need to send them some sort of personal identifying information right away. So some, you know, Netflix is now a popular one to use, or maybe they'll use your bank and claim there's a problem with your account or your utility company and you're overdue. So it's just another one of these things where all of a sudden it may be a company you legitimately do business with who's emailing you and claiming they need some information or they need some money from you. Again, verify who you're giving your information to, who you're giving your money to. So if you get that, for example, as an email, go call up Netflix, get their real number, call their customer service or email into their customer service and verify that what came to you is real, because again, you got to be nervous when the outreach comes to you from somebody you're not sure who it is.
Can we spend just a minute or two? We touched on it a few minutes back, but robocalls. Every single person I know, this drives them crazy. One of my brothers sent me an email the other day saying it's early in the morning and I've already gotten 4 calls. What can be done to stop them? Because they're just driving every single person crazy.
It is really hard, and there needs to be technological solutions to this, you know, from phone companies and others. It's not something, you know, within Connecticut that we can do at Consumer Protection, just because virtually, if not 100%, something approaching 100% of these calls are not being made from within Connecticut. Very often, they're not even being made within the United States. You know, so it's somebody in a boiler room and these robocalls are just going out, and now the way with internet, you can make these calls, and it's almost costless, and all you need is a few, you know, a small percent of people to answer it and to fall for it and to give money. So, you know, what we need is, and I think at the federal level, they're trying to work with companies, how can we technologically avoid it? But for consumers, just be aware this is something that's out there and that it's very hard to stop because it's not happening from anybody who's reachable through the jurisdiction, you know, of your local consumer protection agency. And so, you know, hang up. Definitely, the only reason they're doing it is because it sometimes works. So don't ever fall for it. And you know, we need to put these people out of business by having nobody fall for these things. And eventually there becomes no point in doing it.
I remember a few years back, one of the big things was when you went to a gas station, but it could be anywhere, a gas station, and you handed over your credit card. And then later on, when you get back, you realize that someone had purchased a new colored TV with your credit card. And you said, well, the only place I used it today was at the gas station. Are credit card scams, ripoffs, still as prevalent as they once were?
It's certainly out there, and sometimes people can have a way to sort of manipulate where you're sliding your credit card so they can steal the information that way. So, you know,
I'm sorry, when you say slide your card, you mean that they're making a duplicate of it, or?
Yeah, or they're like sort of kind of stealing the information off of it. So, you know, they can put a device on there to basically so that they can then take the information from it. And gas stations is certainly a place where there's a higher risk of that. Just, you know, typically in a store, hopefully a clerk or somebody working there would be alert to a device being put on it. But yeah, certainly at a gas station, that's where you have places where people are swiping credit cards, and there's not necessarily a person working there who's going to always be monitoring that place. So we always advise, you know, consumers, if you really want to be safe, just you can go inside and pay, or pay with cash. You could certainly, if you want to pay with credit card, and I certainly do, and it's more convenient, you know, use the one that's closer to line of sight from the place that's working or that's under lights, things like that. Because it is incredibly hard. You know, the only, I guess, silver lining in how prevalent some of this is that credit card companies are very alert to this as well. And so it usually takes very few fake charges, if you know, often only one, before your credit card company is going to alert you and is going to cut it off.
All right, so with the 5 minutes that we have left, if we do get scammed, whether online, at the station, at the store, wherever, what should we do?
Well, yeah, so the first thing is, especially if you're scammed, I think sometimes people tend to be embarrassed and don't want to tell anyone. Definitely understand probably 1 in 10 Americans, every single or adults every year, is getting scammed. So do something to cut it off. If you've been scammed over the phone, be prepared. You may get more phone calls. You're going to go on a list where, you know, somebody knows, oh, this person fell for it. They'll probably fall for this again. So we're going to keep calling. So be alert to more of that. Check your credit report and look to see, are there any other charges or any other major purchases I'm not aware of? And again, depends on the nature of the scam. If it was your credit card was stolen, your bank account information was stolen, alert that business right away. So again, you can cut it off. And then call law enforcement if it's been stolen. You can certainly file a complaint with us at dcp.complaints@ct.gov if you email us a complaint, and we can investigate that as well. If it's, you know, happened more out of state, the Federal Trade Commission is another great organization to alert if you've been scammed, and they also look especially for larger scale problems so they can deal with those businesses that are maybe doing the robocalling or that are scamming people on a large scale.
Like I said, we only have just a few minutes left. Besides handling all these complaints, for those who don't know the Department of Consumer Protection, tell us a little bit more about what you do. You're not just responsible for the scams, right? You do licensing, gaming, liquor control, and so on.
That's correct. We do a lot. And in a large way, our overarching goal is we really want there to be a safe marketplace out there for consumers. And we don't want to be out there terrifying people that everywhere they look, it's a scam or somebody trying to trick them. We want people to go out, spend their money, buy products and services they need. And so definitely be alert and be smart about it is important. But we regulate food safety, product safety, legal gaming in the state, so the lottery, off-track betting. We have oversight at some at the casinos. We license hundreds of different types of businesses, so electricians and plumbers and architects. We register home improvement contractors. So there's a large scope of those just to make sure we're aware of who's out there in the marketplace and where the special skills are needed, that they're getting the training and passing a test needed to do that. We also regulate liquor control. We regulate the pharmaceutical industry. So we're doing a lot, you know, the pharmacies and the pharmacists. We have a lot of initiatives to help fight the opioid epidemic as well that we're proud of, and we run the state's medical marijuana program. So we're doing a lot, and we have a lot of people here who work incredibly hard just to try to keep the marketplace in Connecticut safe. So you can go out, you know, be smart about it, do some research, avoid these scams. But there are a lot of good, legitimate businesses out there, and we want people to feel like they have the information and the resources they need to be able to do that.
So your department regulates the sale of medical marijuana in the state. If marijuana is legalized for recreation and if it's sold in Connecticut in a few years, will that also fall under your responsibility?
Most likely. Obviously, it'll depend on what the law looks like and what the legislature does. But prior bills have had consumer protection regulating that, which makes sense because we regulate drug control and medical marijuana and liquor. So wherever you put it in that continuum of medicine to a more of a recreational product, we have some experience there.
Just with the final few seconds left, you had me thinking before when you were talking about, well, pay in cash. I still know a few people, but they're dwindling in number, who still don't like to use credit cards, and they will only pay in cash. Do you know anyone like that?
Not too many.
The number is getting smaller.
A lot more people who only do credit cards, and you just need them, you know, when you're trying to all throw in for something, they don't even have a few bucks on them. But, you know, it's certainly, everybody has their preference, and as long as you understand the risks and are smart about it, you can hopefully avoid a lot of problems or nip them in the bud if something does happen.
And I've been reading about some of the new restaurants that are coming out, and they are completely cashless. You can't use cash there at all. If you don't pay with a credit card or a debit card, you're not going to get your food.
Yeah, you know, there's certain countries that are even moving in that direction for almost everything. So it's definitely, you know, as the marketplace changes and people's preferences change, there's just new things to be aware of.
Once again, buyer beware. And if you want to know what's going on with the scams, information, anything about licensing, it's a fantastic website, the Department of Consumer Protection in Connecticut. Go check it out. And Michelle Siegel is the commissioner, and we appreciate your time. Thank you for being with us today.
Thank you.
This is The Full Story on WSHU and online at WSHU.org. We want to thank Commissioner Siegel and before that, the former presidential candidate, Ralph Nader. It was a fun show. That's it for our show today. Julie Ferdino is our engineer. Our associate producers are Christian Carter, Sabrina Garone, Natalie Chafari. Carrie Frank is the digital editor. Ann Lopez is the producer. Terry Sheridan, our news director. I'm Ron Ropiak. Thanks to all of you for being part of The Full Story.